Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why? Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love in Aramaic Rachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about Michael or myself or the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mindshifters Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Today is Tuesday, October the 2nd, 2018. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored, excited, and delighted that you're here with us today. Once more, as we enter into this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and correlating materials. So it's a pleasure to, in this craziness that's going on in our world, the conflict over things where people could be working together, where it seems people believe in survival of the fittest rather than survival of the most cooperative, which we know is the real rule, and how to get back to that space of functioning truly as a human being, as love, which is just exactly how we are designed to function. So, powerful tools available from the first century Aramaic language, and we've worked to develop those tools to make them comprehensible within the context of our culture. Learning new cultural skills sometimes is quite a challenge. And so, we're here to help people to reorient themselves to being able to comprehend a way of moving inside of ourselves to remove conflict, to remove hostility and fear, and to once again function truly as human beings. You know, yesterday we were talking about a video from a cognitive scientist who is talking about language and ways of perceiving through language. And we used the example of a particular culture where counting is not part of the culture. They don't count things. Just doesn't happen. So if you were to show them a picture and say, how many are there? They couldn't answer you. If you ask someone to gather a similar number of these particular things, only another, let's say the example that she uses is, you know, there are pictures of penguins. So, you know, how many penguins are there? There are 8 penguins. So now go gather me 8 ducks. And they couldn't do it because the brain cells aren't there for accessing information in that way. Not something that's important, obviously, in that culture. Speaks about several examples of things like that, but that's one that stands out. And so recognizing, you go back to Yeshua 2,000 years ago, and maybe he was one of the first cognitive scientists on the planet, because what he said was, you know, and we could easily imagine him saying to the person who lives in a culture where we've got eight penguins and we want you to collect eight ducks, and say, you can't collect eight ducks until you've got the eyes to see and the ears to hear. In other words, you got to be able to look at the picture of the penguin and be able to count eight penguins in order to gather eight ducks. You got to have the brain cells for that. You've got to have the orientation for that. Without that orientation, you can't do it. So could we say that Yeshua, having that understanding, was a cognitive scientist? Yeah, I'd say that's just one more cap that we could put on the man who was a master physicist, physiologist, psychologist, and geneticist. And to recognize that understanding, and then to realize that he had a cultural understanding of a way to reach inside of ourselves and remove from ourselves all, I mean, right down to removing the capacity for any form of hostility or fear. Not exactly a common thing, at least in this culture. There are cultures that function certainly far more peacefully than this one does. But here's a man who's teaching people in the context of the Aramaic culture how to achieve that possibility. And it obviously was not in common understanding, otherwise he wouldn't have had to teach people how to perceive that way. So, you know, each of the lessons we're going over in the course, and we're up to lesson 273, getting close to the end of the year already, he's teaching people and helping people to build the brain cells for how to achieve a way of perceiving where, instead of counting penguins and gathering ducks of the same number, you could recognize that if you are in hostility or fear, something that goes against your true nature as love, you're in a disease state, you're suffering from a physiological, mental, emotional, spiritual disease, to build the brain cells, to have the comprehension of that, and then to have the willingness to say, and if I'm in that disease state, what I desire, even though my culture's taught me, well, with all this hostility, I can win, my culture's taught me that, I need a total reorientation in order to go, oh, let's see, I'll use this hostility, I'll win, and then I'll create a family system, cancel the thought where I have a child that commits suicide. Gee, is that winning? If out of hostility, every time my child came to me, I won over them with my hostility, I imbued them with my hostility, and they again cancel the thought, commit suicide, then because I used hostility, now I'm a winner, because yesterday I made a $1 billion deal and I won $1 billion. So he's giving people that kind of refinement and that kind of understanding. So in this lesson 273, one of the instructions he's offering repeatedly is that we need to come to a place of silence, that the Creator's voice, the Creator's language is silence. I think it was Rumi that said, the Creator's language is silence, everything else is an interpretation. Yeah, we could say a poor interpretation. So the title of this lesson is The Stillness of the Serenity of Love is in me, is mine. So if I've come up in a culture that hasn't taught me that that's a possibility, when I'm first introduced to the thought, gee, the stillness of the serenity of love is mine. What a radical thought if you were sitting in Senate hearings last week. To think, the stillness of the serenity of love is mine. Sitting watching these people rage at each other. So the lesson unfolds with the thought, perhaps we're now ready for a day of complete tranquility. Have you ever had a day like that? Are you ready? Have you been building the brain cells? Have you been reorienting in 272 lessons? incorporating forgiveness to stand in a space of complete tranquility. The lesson says to you, if this is not feasible, we are content and even more than satisfied to learn how such a day can be achieved. Like, hopefully the orientation has been built into you by now, into each of us, I'm talking about us, that this is actually a possibility. You know, I kind of tongue-in-cheek in the, when I introduce the Healing Through Relationships workshop, I talk about how it's amazing how many people live their lives in conflict. They've got unresolved rage and guilt and grief and sadness and pain and family dynamics, relationship dynamics, sexual dynamics. And they go into relationship and they want the relationship to be tranquil, serene. And then when it's not, having carried that bag of garbage into the relationship, they turn around and point at their partner and tell them how that's all your fault. I can remember one particular situation where a woman is saying to her spouse, a woman who's been through all kinds of trauma and hardly touched the work, and she's raging at her, can't you see how afraid I am? It's like, did you carry the fear into the relationship, and are you now blaming your spouse for the fact that you carried that into the relationship? Of course somebody in that place can't fathom that complete day of total tranquility is possible. So now what the Course is saying is, okay, if you're not at that point yet, it's okay to, if you can't comprehend that, but can you be delighted to learn that it is possible and how you can achieve that? Are there enough brain cells built? Is your orientation towards serenity deep enough that you can go, yeah, boy, pardon me, I really would go for a day like that. I really am willing to let go of the hostilities, the rages, the defensiveness, the blame that I've used to try to keep others at bay. I'm ready to go. Yeah, that's what my family system taught me. That's what my culture taught me. That's what my orientation is. That's what my language has been. And I'm so ready to let go of that and actually enter into a space of that kind of serenity. So the lesson goes ahead and tells us, if we give way to a disturbance, let us learn how to dismiss it and return to serenity. The lesson actually uses the word peace, but in the Aramaic, where we're told that by the Greeks that Yeshua said, my peace I give to you. In Aramaic, it was actually my serenity I give to you. Peace is a war word. You know, war and peace, they're linked. Serenity is a whole different game. So if you're in disturbance, are you willing to turn your mind back over to serenity and dismiss? And this dismissal would be akin to forgive. If disturbance comes up in you, are you willing to learn to weaken the field of that disturbance and the language that delivers it to you through forgiveness so that you can be free of it? So in this, you know, at this stage in practice, what the lesson is saying is, well, what we need to tell our minds with certainty is the stillness of the serenity of love is mine. And that nothing can intrude upon that serenity that love itself has given to you. And so just breathe with me and allow your mind to be quiet for a moment. Just be quiet, mind. Speaking to the Creator Father, your serenity is mine. What need have I to fear that anything could rob me of what you have given me to keep? Your gifts to me are eternal, and so is your serenity. That serenity you gave to your son is with me still. That serenity you gave to your daughter is with me still. In quietness and in my own eternal active presence of love. So the Creator gave you a gift. If you've been brought up in a culture, in a family system, in a genetic history, in a language framework that takes it away from you, then it's time to start to question that. And I can remember being a kid and, you know, to cherish the good, to aim for the good, to recognize that often we fell short of that, but to aim for it, to cherish it, to care for it. And I can remember now being introduced to some of the words of the culture. Vile words, vicious words, ugly words, at least the context of the culture presented them in that form. And I can remember scratching my head thinking, why did we ever even hear these words? Why were these things ever even introduced to us to become part of our brain cell structure and our conceptual structure? And then, of course, the logical question becomes, what do I do to return to innocence? The return to innocence is a journey of forgiveness. And forgiveness meaning removal, dismissal of hostility and fear. When you watch the video we talked about yesterday from this cognitive scientist, you see there are so many, 700 languages on the planet, she's telling us, and there's so many different ways of perceiving it. And I mean, so radically different that someone who looks at a picture of 8 penguins couldn't go and gather 8 ducks in response to it, because it's such a different way of constructing one's perceptual constructs. What it would be like to be brought up in a conceptual framework where everyone functioned as the newborn functions, as the presence of love, and held that space for each other one. How different would our lives be? And so we'll join you in just taking a moment and being in that space of quietness. And out of that space, let's join in bringing forward the active presence of love. For everyone that's involved in the political process that's lying, frauding, beating on each other, to return to love and heal. Returning to love doesn't mean that you lay down and let people walk all over your face. Certainly you can hold people accountable. But to hold people accountable, and this is some, for some people, a fresh new idea, to hold people accountable from a space rather than of punishment and force and blame, to hold people accountable from a space of active present love, changes everything. And we're here to support changing everything. So, Jeannie, is Dr. Tim with us today?
He is, and
sure.
He's on.
Awesome. Well, good day, sir. How do you be?
I am well.
I'm quite well. I'm just having a busy morning, taking family members to doctors and getting ready for a whole long afternoon of patients and a support group tonight. And making myself, availing myself of the archives today. And what came up when I was flipping through was the show from October 6th where Susan Bingham called in and did a worksheet on her terror. And it struck me again as just a wonderful, very powerful example of how my mind is going to tell me that something I heard somebody say or read in a magazine or saw as I was driving down the street is causing my terror. And it will keep me hyper-focused and distracted searching at those outside issues or past experiences and forever hide from me what's actually causing my upset, which I'm carrying around with me. So I would highly recommend people go back and listen to the October 6th show where Susan Bingham
2017?
Was. No, this year. Just this year. It was
October
the Monday
6th?
After Michelle. I'm sorry.
You see, you're talking about September.
September?
September, yeah. We're on October 2nd now. That's what I was thinking. Must have been last year. Okay. Got it.
No, it was September, I guess. Anyway, it was right after Michelle did hers on Wednesday and Thursday.
Right.
And that following Monday, so it was 9-3, 9-4, 9-5, and on Monday was 9-6. So,
cool.
Anyway, it's very, to me, a very potent example of how when the worksheet process is done and we take some time to line up the emotion we're feeling, the thought we're using to create that emotion, and the goal, it just falls together when we cancel the need for all of that to be right and ask to be shown something. What tumbles out of the unconscious will be right in line with what, you know, what was resonating with that conscious part of the mind and yet completely hidden from us. So powerful stuff. Thanks again to everybody who calls in and shares and either does a worksheet or frames one out or shares their issues of being stuck with one point or another of the worksheet, because it's just a powerful teaching mechanism for everybody when we choose to do that.
Yay. I'm with that 2,000%.
And I'd be happy to hear from Susan or anybody else who's done any work on the show recently to see how the follow-up is going, see if the results they got held or led them to some new level of awareness or exploration. So,
cool.
Those are my thoughts in this busy morning.
All right. Well, let's ask. And I will mention that yesterday, Jeannie put, we referred to two different TED Talks yesterday. The one by the cognitive scientist that I mentioned is Lyra Boroditsky. And there's a link on yesterday's notes to Lyra Boroditsky's, not one I've exactly got the brain cells for, cognitive scientists on language and words, the power of words. And there's also a TED Talk there from a neuroscientist, Anil Seth, both people that Tim is, have introduced to the show, that just bring us just powerful scientific information. It just backs up everything we've been talking about, just puts it all in perspective and adds another level of empowerment and the brain cells and the language to be able to generate realities that have not yet been conceived of. So, Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
There is nobody in the chat room but me. And nobody has a hand up. We've got several people on the switchboard, but so if someone presses 1, we've got 35 minutes. We've got plenty of time. A hand just went up. Area code 910, you're on the air.
910, you're on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? Well, I wonder if they got disconnected. 910.
Well, I'm sorry. Hello.
Oh, we got you.
I accidentally pressed mute, so I apologize.
I have been mute challenged more times than I can count, young lady, so I understand.
Okay. I didn't know how to frame my question, so I'm going to attempt to do this as I share with you my story. But I've been thinking about calling for the last 3 days, and I just didn't know how to word my stuff. So,
okay. Well, let's see if we can help you.
I'll do it as best I can. I had a situation that has resonated a lot of, I guess, sadness in me. Wherein my I invited my ex-husband to join the family just for the purpose of attending a laws of living class. That would be an 8-week process, and at the same time it would allow him an opportunity to reconnect with his children, whom he's been estranged from, from the whole family, for some years. And at the same time, I wanted it to be a win-win-win situation where he connects with his children, gets some lessons and guidance from the laws of living class, and then and my kids be able to reconnect with him as well, and then I had a benefit for myself as well. Built in where he could do some work in the house, some home repairs, but also that would help him in terms of doing something that would contribute to the kids being able to see that he's offering something. Okay, so
got the picture.
Okay, so we're previously married. And have had many issues surrounding his alcohol and drug use. And I made a stipulation.
You've had issues around his alcohol and drug use, or he's had issues around his alcohol and drug use?
I had issues.
Okay.
Around his drug and alcohol use, and I made the stipulation that there were 3 rules during this 8-week period or 6-week period, that there's no drugs, there's no alcohol, and there's no verbal abuse. Of course, verbal / physical, but that was understood.
So did you get what you were asking for then?
I'm sorry, would you repeat that?
Did you get what you were asking for then?
No, I think he made an effort, but there was some, he bought a beer or two, and I said, you can't do that in my house.
Let's get back to speech. Remember, we've got this thing we deal with in laws of living called regulatory speech. And that regulatory speech sets up what we ask for. So if I say to you, I can pretend to myself that I'm saying, don't think about the color of your car. But when I say don't think about the color of your car, the thing that's most likely to move in you and that I'm going to get a response from is going to be about the color of your car, right?
I hear you. I'm sorry.
You go
I'm
back to the scriptures.
So.
It's okay. We're clear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're clear. You're good. No interference. So regulatory speech says I'm going to tend to get what I'm focused on and what I'm creating and what I'm asking for. You go back and you hear in the scriptures you talk about you don't get what you ask for because you ask incorrectly. And so if I'm saying, don't give me alcohol abuse. Which brain cells do you suppose someone who's abused alcohol is going to tend to work out of?
Okay, the alcohol abuse.
And if I say, don't do any drugs here, what brain cells are going to fire? What are they likely to function out of?
Okay,
I get you.
No
verbal abuse allowed in this house. What's going to resonate, especially with someone who has a history of verbal abuse?
Okay.
So my offering would be that, you know, recognizing that the culture has us focusing on what we don't want. There's forgiveness work to be done, obviously, around all three of those issues. And you mentioned the physical abuse as well. So I assume there has been in the past perhaps some of that. So they'd be arenas in forgiveness so that you cognitively, when you would think about, I have this person who I was once married to, who I cherished, and they cherished me, and they had lost themselves in alcohol and physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse, drugs, that the natural cognitive response would be, and so I'm going to invite them back into this space so that if there's anything left of any inclination toward alcohol abuse or drug abuse or physical abuse or emotional abuse, we're going to allow those things to surface and heal so that we have a space where we all just naturally stay clean and sober and speak to each other lovingly, gently, and with respect. Now, which one was it that you asked for?
Okay, I hear you. What I'm understanding you to say is that the way that I phrased things was to ask for what I didn't want, the alcohol abuse, the possibly drug abuse, I'm not sure, and the verbal abuse, okay? And that's what surfaced during this temporary time that he was with us.
So, you know, if we listen to Yeshua, he tells us we're creators, we're the offspring of the Creator, and we're creative beings. And he gives us the key to creativity. He says, here's how it works. Let thine eye be single, and thy body will be filled with light. Now, light, in that case, if you go back to the Aramaic, if you talk to physicists today, they'll tell you that matter, your material world and your material structure, is made of frozen light. What freezes the light into that form is focus. Let thine eye be single. So a singular focus on what I don't want, and I get it, because it's not the asking that's the key, it's the focus that's the key. And so when I'm focused on, and this is the game the whole world has taught us all. These are the brain cells we all have, and it's a big habit to undo. And I say that for myself because oftentimes mid-sentence, I've trained myself to observe my own mind, and mid-sentence I'll ask myself asking something out of brain cells for what I don't want. And I have to stop and go, whoa, I'll cancel that thought and what I really want, and then purposely, consciously structure, having caught myself in the act of creating what I don't want, having caught myself to let go of that and then correct my creative action, which is words. And you listen to Yeshua again, he says, the power of life and death is in our words. And so as I correct myself, we're talking about changing this whole cognitive structure, this whole verbal structure, to move us in the direction of a creation about what we do want as human beings, as the active presence of love, is really appropriate for us to be creating for ourselves. And my offering would be that this would really be a powerful show, I think, to share with him and with your children as the lesson gets clear and everybody in the family can join in. Oh, yeah. Look at our past and what we've done and where we've come from. And so now, as a community of family, we can, even though we're a strange family at this point, we can create individually and collectively something different. But if you don't ever change the words, you can't ever change the creation.
Okay. I hear you. Okay, that makes sense, and helped me to realize the importance of how we frame it, and just being kind of you ignite an awareness in me of how often I say what I don't want. I mean, that's typically how
it's the whole culture. That's the whole culture. Don't fall down those steps and break your neck. It was like specific instructions. Kid, don't you ever look at me like that again. Don't you ever talk to me like that. And they're, what's the child going to do? All the child hears, you know, the three-year-old, all the three-year-old hears is, Mom just said, talk to me like that again. The word don't doesn't mean anything. So the child talks like that again, following the adult's instruction, and then the adult goes berserk because the child just did exactly what it was instructed to. Boy, you want to talk about how to split a child's mind. And, you know, we've all been split like that, and so this is the opportunity to heal, to be able to bring those things into the circle of love and the community of love and bring those things forward for healing. So it wouldn't mean that if you said, okay, now we're going to come together, we're going to, you know, deal with alcohol, we're going to deal with drugs if they come up, we're going to deal with verbal abuse and mental abuse and physical abuse, and now we're all going to be a peaceful, happy family. It means that now we recognize the work we have to do individually and collectively. And that work we do ourselves within our own communities, you know, as kids go off and create their own families, they'll tend to follow the good old family feeling and the good old family patterns. And if blame has been the game, then they'll point the finger at and blame. And that'll be their opportunity to go, oh, here I am playing the blame game again. Gee, just like my power person. How did it feel for me when my power person was always blaming me and telling me what was wrong with me and giving me my daily dose of disapproval? Wow, I didn't like that at all. Well, then why are you handing a daily dose of disapproval to this person that you say you cherish? Well, because that's what's in my verbal structure. That's what I haven't forgiven yet. That's what's in my regulatory speech. So it's change right down to including changing the speech pattern. So the key to how all of this is turned around and undone. And it's a process, and it sure doesn't happen overnight.
But it does help with seeing the awareness, like, you know, or being made aware of the pattern. Because honestly, until I've heard you say the same before about regulatory speech, but it didn't really click until now. Like, you know, I mean, this is a personal example, I suppose. And before it was like, well, I mean, I wondered how important it is, really, how, you know, I mean, if I say don't do it or if I say do it, but I kind of hear you better now. Maybe I'm just building the brain cells.
Building the brain cells. That's it. That's exactly what it is. That's what we're saying. And, you know, I'll offer that after almost 50 years of doing this work with people, my observation is, and I'm not remembering exactly when your first workshop was, but it takes 5 to 10 years for people to build the brain cells to really get that. And I think you've been around the work, what now, 3 or 4 years? And this is what it means to. Oh, that's what it means to go, that's what it meant. And that's what it takes to come out of Egypt, to come out of that darkness of the hostility and fear-based world in mind and into the promised land. Oh, I can play the game of conscious co-creation instead of this unconscious, automatic speech, regulatory speech that I never even was aware was there, let alone its power.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was more a question of semantics before, you know, honestly. But I see it more clearly now. It's
literal vibration. Literal vibration. Were you on the show yesterday?
No, I was not.
Well, in the context of this, I'd invite you to go back to. Okay, so if you haven't watched that Anil Seth video and the Lyra Borodetsky video, in the context of this conversation, both of those videos will be invaluable to you.
Oh, hello.
and,
okay.
you know, maybe sit down with the kids, sit down with the kids and listen to this show again, and then watch those two videos together. It'll open so much comprehension and conversation and healing and, I mean, just beyond imagining.
Wow. Okay. I'll do that.
So I'm excited for you.
Yes, I'm definitely interested in listening to those videos that you've mentioned yesterday. So
no, there are links. Jeannie put links in the notes from yesterday's archives, so you might go back and just spend some time with those. That'd be awesome.
Yes, I'll do that. I may not do it today, but I'll do it today or tomorrow. But yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you. You've added clarity to the importance of regulatory speech. I always thought it was semantics before, but now it's at a deeper level that I understand it. It's more clear. Thank you.
Well, thank you for bringing it forward, because that creates a home run for everybody that's listening, all of us. And that, to me, is the real gift of this show and the opportunity to be with the material and do the archives. And, you know, you can go back and listen to the archive of this show a week from now and 3 months from now and a year from now, put it on your calendar, and it'll have whole new layers of meanings as you go forward, building deeper levels of brain cells of what it is we're talking about. Whole new levels.
Mm-hmm.
A year from now, you could listen to this show again and then call in, and we would have such another level of conversation that it actually brings me back to where Paul talked about, you know, the people coming into the study, and he's saying, well, you know, that person just came in last week. You can't give them meat. You can't take them into a conversation about regulatory speech and brain cells and let thine eye be single in that body. That's too much for them. You got to give them milk. You just give them a little, well, okay, how about if we do the children's worksheet? How about if we talk about, gee, hold a newborn child and remember that that's your essence. That's the milk. And it's as you build the brain cells and move forward that, you're ready for, you know,
mm-hmm.
real potatoes and mm-hmm. carrots is the thing. To put it in vegetarian
Thank you.
Talk.
Thank you. Yes, it's beeped, and it's kind of like a little bell went off, a little bulb went off in my head, and as we're speaking about this regulatory speech, I'm getting it better now. So thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Sweet.
I have a side note. Can I share with you one other item?
Before you run in, yes, absolutely. But before you do that, just on the topic of words, one more thing. Do you know what the Native American word is for a vegetarian? Or words, actually two words. Yeah, it's bad hunter.
Oh, bad hunter.
Excuse me. Go ahead with your other point.
Wow, I like that. Yesterday, I was thinking of this as I was listening to the radio program, and so I have an opportunity to tell you today that I was moved during the program to make an offer, and I need to do it verbally, so I make a commitment as I do this. But I want to offer sending you $20 a month to the organization for the work that you do. It's not much, but it's something. And
that's awesome.
I want
Thank
to
you.
Do something. Yeah, I want to do something to help, and you know, and maybe somebody else will send in $5, and maybe someone else another $10, and we can, you know, it's moving in a direction of helping you guys, you and Jeannie, Dr. Tim, and so forth, to promote the teachings that you do. I know that it's helped me a great deal and continues to help me, and so by saying it aloud, you know, that I'm offering to send that monthly to you, it makes a commitment in my mind. It's not, you know, it's like I've said it. Now,
awesome.
You know, am I doing it? So I will, and I if you could maybe say what address to send it to, that would be
Thank
helpful
you.
Also. You're welcome. And I'm
okay.
going to send that this week and start every cool. month, let's say the first week of every month when I get paid, okay?
Great. Well, it is particularly helpful right now, especially as we're not on the road traveling, doing workshops like we normally do, and that we're working on these app projects and such that are just cash out, and we put them out there for free. So that's extremely helpful. The easiest way to do it is to just go to our website, and there's a donate button, and you can set up a recurring monthly donation that just does that automatically. So if you go, there's a button that says donate. If you click on that, it goes to PayPal, which is how we receive it. But you can use any credit card you want, and you can just set it up on a recurring monthly basis, and then it's a done deal. So that would be, yes, very much appreciated and very helpful.
So I can do it in the same way that I pay my bills every month. I can just put
you got
in.
It.
Oh, great. So consider it done. Okay. This
All right.
I will take
well, thank
care
you,
of that.
Thank you.
It's going to be recurring. Yes, yes. And when I'm able to increase it to 25, then I'll do it then. But at this point,
awesome.
20 is what I can chip. So thank you.
That
That's
would be fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
That will be very
Bye.
Helpful. All right. Blessings. Appreciate you. Take care.
Yes,
bye-bye.
I appreciate you too. Bye.
All right, lots of love. All right, what a great discussion. What a great opening. Thank you, thank you. Tim, anything else to add to that discussion? Jeannie, anything to add to the whole regulatory speech, single focus, creation? Anything to share?
Well, I would just say that it's a great reminder. She said prior to this, it just seemed like semantics to her. Or nitpicking. And what I try to encourage people to do is try and change the way you're speaking. Speak in the first person. Catch those times when you say, this made me or that made me. And now do a worksheet or two on it and just watch how your life starts to change. The more I have trained myself to look for those thoughts and words coming from my mind about outside influences causing my emotions, the easier it gets for me to catch it, and the better my life gets. The less time I spend in the negative emotions, the quicker I turn my focus inside, figure out where I'm producing this within me, the easier it is for me to drop it and move back to that serenity you're talking about.
Yay. Perfect. Jeannie, any thoughts for you, Dan?
No, it's all good. I was just looking. Somebody just sent a text, and I was just trying to open it to see if they had something to say about what was just going on in the show, but I'm not finding the text, so I'm not sure.
Okay. Cool. Well, we've got about 12 minutes left, and so if anyone has a thought for us, a question, anything we can support you with, we would love to hear it. What's on your mind? How can we support you?
A hand just went up. It is 610. You're on the air.
It's Susan Bingham. I've been listening to the show, and I wanted to answer Dr. Tim's question about the terror worksheet. The terror
cool.
went away. It took care of it. I have other things going on, but that one hasn't come up again. So.
Awesome. That's the idea.
Yep.
That's what it's all about, Al. Oh. That's what it's all about, Alfie.
Right.
Hey, we could write a song based on that, especially with your help, right?
Yeah, we gave our Syrophoenician Woman Opera yesterday. Two performances went really well. I'm trying to put it up on. It went well enough. I mean, it's a difficult piece, and there were some things that weren't perfect, but it came across. It was very well received, and I'm putting it up on YouTube or on my website as soon as I get the scrolling libretto to work with the audio, which is tricky. But anyway.
Well, when you do that, please send me a link. I'd love to observe what you're doing.
Oh, thanks.
Send me a link, a text. That'd be awesome.
All right. I'm in my car, and I wasn't going to call in because I'm in my car, but I wanted to say that the lesson for today, my lesson for miracles, which is not on any schedule, it's lesson 323, sadly make the sacrifice of fear. And that has just been the best help, because if we sacrifice something, we're saying that we're giving up something that we want to keep, that it hurts us to give up. And I'm thinking, okay, we were talking about addiction to pain or addiction to whatever we're addicted to, upset, anger, whatever it is. And this is it. This puts it in a different way. And I thought it went well with what you were talking about today, your whole introduction and everything. And somehow, anyway, I'm being inarticulate because I'm making sure I get into this row of traffic without killing somebody, okay?
But yeah, please be safe.
Yeah, I am. But I've just been thinking what a gift that lesson is for today, to offer a sacrifice. So you can give yourself lots of credit for giving something up that you really want, but what it is that you think you really want, you don't want at all. So
many goals, so ridiculous. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Oh, good. All right.
Perfect sense, yeah. Sweet. Well, what else is exciting in your world?
Well, I guess I'm very excited about that opera and the fact that we got through it. A teenager sang the part of the little girl who is possessed by a demon, and I had the teenager reaming her mother out in a rage. And she's the daughter of the rector of our church. And the rector is a woman. And the rector cried throughout and said, how did you know what went on in our house?
Wow.
Some months ago, my daughter was doing that to us. And she said, I
what
had
an
no
opening to introduce forgiveness. What an opening
Isn't
to introduce
that amazing?
Forgiveness. Oh.
Yeah, and she and her daughter have had a talk about it. And then my son comes up to me and he said, that wasn't demons. That's what teenagers do, Mom. You just wrote about teenagers. So she asked me, how did you know that? I said, are you kidding? I mean, all I have to do is look in my own heart and it's all there, all that dark stuff.
Well, hence the reason for deep forgiveness. Back a few months ago, there's a young man named David who calls into the show occasionally. And we've known David since he came out of probably his fifth trip into detox after some really deep loss of years in alcoholism. And at about the age of maybe 23 or 24, stepped into this work after about his fifth or sixth detox. And several years of doing his work, teaching the work, and meeting a woman, marrying, having a baby. And he was sharing with us that his daughter, who's now 13, had come home from school lamenting about the demons that possessed, in the language of our sharing just now, opera, the demons that were running the kids she was observing at school. And, you know, this girl's now 13. She had been taught forgiveness from in utero and infancy and early childhood and, you know, all the way through it. And he shared with us that, you know, his daughter had just said one of the most, you know, delightful things, you know, a series of the most delightful words that he'd ever heard. And the words were, I'm so happy that I love my parents, that I'm close to my parents, and I care about my parents. And those are not things teenagers do. Those are things the culture has trained teenagers to do. Teenagers are beings of awesome present love unless they've been fed other words and other ideas.
Yep.
So if a minister has a child and feeds his child all this crap about you're a sinner and you're, you know, hell is going to get you and you better repent, expect that kid to be puking in your face when they get to, of age. It's probably what's going to happen. Or or they'll hide it and they'll be puking in somebody else's face.
Yes, true.
Or they'll be getting drunk and assaulting people, like we're seeing opening up in awareness in the culture. And it's all just part of the healing process to let it open and to let it move. So that's an awesome opportunity for that young lady who played that part, you know, to have a conversation with her about, you do what with your parents? Did you know that that's just not human and that there's some tools with which you can forgive that? And, Mom, by the way, you might want to participate because this stuff isn't normal. This is cultural insanity that's been put into parents and kids.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that the way you just said it, and that's really new thought. I'll talk to my rector about it. She's a peach of a woman. Yeah, I'm shutting off
Sweet.
The car, walking over.
Well, you know,
I know you have no more time.
Do a worksheet or two with her and see what happens. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm reading Mitzi's book. It's like having your guts wrenched. But I just wanted to say it is gorgeous. It is amazing. Thanks for recommending it. I hope she's selling them like hotcakes. What a beautiful portrayal of what mental illness is, because she retains the beauty of that boy throughout. He's never an objectively, you know, outcast kid. He's himself ill, and it's just amazing. I haven't gotten to the part where he dies, but I know it's coming. Anyway, I know you have to go, but thanks so much, Michael, Jeannie.
And having said that, for those who perhaps weren't with us the other day, the book that is being spoken about is called Journey, A Mother's Account of Love, Loss, and Spiritual Healing by Mitzi Montague Bauer. And so it's available on Amazon in paperback. It's available in audiobook. It's available in Kindle. And so Journey, G-O-U-R-N-E-Y, A Mother's Account of Love, Loss, and Spiritual Healing by Mitzi, M-I-T-Z-I, Montague-Bauer. Grab it on Amazon. Powerful book. Awesome, awesome. The work that that Mitzi and her husband did after their son Journey passed was just monumental, and she writes about it very powerfully. So thank you for the input on all fronts in that regard, young lady, and we'll look forward to the next time we get to chat. In the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal lives. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.